Hello, and welcome to a series of 48 lectures that I hope will take us on a journey through the development of ancient civilizations in different parts of the world. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Scott McEachern. I'm an archaeologist at Bowdoin College in Brunswick, in Maine. I work personally in Central Africa, primarily looking at the appearance of states during the Iron Age in this part of the world over the last 2,000 years, specifically in the southern Lake Chad Basin in what's now northeastern Nigeria, northern Cameroon, and western Chad. I've actually been working in that area of Africa since 1984 with some periodic excursions into other areas of the continent. But I must say, it's a wonderful part of the world to do archaeology in. It's a lovely area. What I want to do at this point is to introduce you through this set of lectures to a topic that perpetually fascinates me, that gives rise to some extraordinarily interesting archaeological fieldwork and some heated professional debates among archaeologists. And that, at least judging from the number of books and television shows and movies, continues to hold the American and indeed the global general public spellbound. The origin of different civilizations in different parts of the world. If we paid attention only to those books and television shows and movies for the general public, one might think that that was all there was to archaeology. That's not the case, but it is an extremely important topic within the discipline of archaeology. All archaeology is in one form or another a story about how we humans came to be as we are today in the world. Sometimes this is done at long range, if you like, as we examine the lives of our early hominid ancestors, Australopithecus africanus, Homo erectus, perhaps most famously, the Neanderthals, Homo neanderthalensis, species that were not us, but were ancestral to us, or related to us at the very least. Sometimes our research as archaeologists covers much more recent periods, including the time periods that I'm going to be talking about in this set of lectures. Sometimes archaeology involves the rescue from oblivion of parts of human history that hitherto we knew nothing about. And this is one of the most wonderful things about the discipline. It might be ancient cave paintings in France, or, because I'm an Africanist, just as ancient in Namibia, in Southwest Africa. It might involve the study of big game hunters in Tasmania or Idaho. At other times, archaeology rediscovers stories that perhaps we thought we knew, but in fact did not know as well as we thought. The topic of this course is probably one of the latter, one of these areas that archaeologists and the general public thinks it knows well, but perhaps some other perspectives would be useful. Most Americans have heard of the glories of ancient Egypt, or of dynastic China, or perhaps of the Maya people of Mesoamerica. But how did those ancient civilizations come into being in the first place? How did they originate? What were the mechanisms by which they appear on Earth? This presumably wasn't an accident, nor, for that matter, did they all stem from one source. This is not a single event. The appearance of civilizations is an event that happens in different places. These civilizations developed separately in different areas at different periods of time. And the panoply of culture that goes along with them all over the world. All of those extraordinary cultural achievements that we associate with ancient civilizations. Kingship, monumental architecture, pyramids, palaces, royal tombs, and on and on and on. Writing systems, serfs and enslavement, because this wasn't by any means always a pretty process. All of these achievements developed separately in different parts of the world, multiple times, all over the old world and the new world. When we think about it, this is actually pretty extraordinary. Why is it that about 5,000 years ago, because that is when these events begin, why is it that at that time, these Baroque societies, in many ways, begin to appear on the earth after hundreds of thousands of years when humans seem to have gotten along very well without them? Our ancestors before that don't appear to have needed states. They existed as hunter-gatherers and farmers and fishermen all over the earth very successfully. So why is it that about 5,000 years ago, these very complex societies, politically complex, socially complex, begin to appear in different parts of the world? What common threads, common mechanisms can we invoke to explain this? Those questions are the focus of this course. So this set of 48 lectures will examine ancient states and civilizations in different parts of the world and will particularly examine how they developed. I'm going to be looking at their origins, the origins of states and civilizations, as an archaeological and historical problem, something that can be analyzed. My goals for this set of lectures are a bit different from those of a great civilizations course, which tends to focus on the elite achievements of these cultures and tends to treat each civilization more or less individually. In this set of lectures, on the other hand, we're going to look at the processes through which states originally formed in comparative perspective. We're going to examine how, and I hope why, they developed out of earlier societies, ancestral societies in these different parts of the world. If you like, we could think of the aims of this set of lectures as an anthropology of the past, an anthropology of states and civilizations. It does not aim to be comprehensive, examining every ancient state all over the world, because such a task would result, to be perfectly frank, in a hurried and superficial analysis. Instead, we're going to look at, in more detail, at a variety of examples of early states from different regions of the world, in order, I hope, to get a better sense of how these different developments took place in different circumstances, in different historical circumstances, in different environmental circumstances, in different economic and social circumstances, showing you as wide a variety of developments towards statehood, towards civilization, as is possible. People often assume, as soon as they hear that I'm an archaeologist, that I work on ancient civilizations. Or sometimes they assume that I work with dinosaurs. But that's a different question, and then I get into an explanation of, no, actually, I'm not a paleontologist. Often, the best thing I can do in these cases is nod and agree. In fact, this is a complicated issue, this question of ancient civilizations. And what you're getting is the extended 48-part answer to the question of what I do for a living. Because in reality, ancient civilizations That term is not the way that archaeologists tend to think about what we do, even those of us who study ancient states. Let's talk for a moment about the idea of civilizations, and then move on to a closely related idea, that of states. Non-archaeologists often talk about ancient civilizations, but in fact, there are some problems with that term, particularly civilizations. Ancient is, that's fine. We need to recognize the relationship between the terms civilizations and states. The term civilization can cause some confusion for a number of reasons. It may imply that some cultures, those called civilizations, are civilized in a normative or value-laden sense, while other societies in different parts of the world that are not designated as civilizations were not or are not civilized. As an Africanist working in areas where people have often been unjustly and dismissively labeled by outsiders as uncivilized, this is an important question to me. And it really is interesting that, to such a great extent, the language that we use in the Western world to designate people who are civilized is so closely tied to the language that we're going to be examining when we're looking at the origins of civilization. We say that people are urbane. They're urban. They come from the city. We say that they're cosmopolitan. They belong to a universal city, if you like, of good manners and polite behavior. We talk about the very term civitatis, civilized itself, refers to a city. And what do we call people who are not civilized? What do we say about them? We say they're barbarians, that they speak in language, in words that have no meaning. Their words just go bar, bar, bar in a meaningless way. We say that they're savage, they're sauvage, they're from the woods. We say literally that they are outlandish. So we have to be very careful about these terminologies, because these terminologies that we use, the value-laden terminologies that we use to talk about good behavior versus uncouth behavior, about positive cultural elements versus negative ones, those are all forms of language that have to do with the city versus the country, the center versus the frontiers and those areas beyond the frontiers. Some of the very topics we're going to look at in this course. So this question of naming, of calling certain peoples civilized, saying that they live in a civilization, is actually, theoretically, a really fraught problem. Just as importantly, or perhaps even more importantly, the term civilization is not precisely defined from the point of view of archaeology, politically, culturally, or economically. And because it's not precisely defined, it's thus difficult to analyze. What exactly is a civilization in political terms? Is it a political term? Is it a social term? Does it refer only to elite behavior? Or is it in some ways characteristic of the entire culture? Is it an absolute term that we can say, yes, this is a civilization, and this is a civilization, and this is a civilization? Or is it a comparative term where we say this group of people is civilized versus that group? Which societies are civilizations and which are not? There's no agreement on any of these issues. So one of the real problems is the lack of precision of this term civilization. Because of this, archaeologists tend to conceive of their research as the study of ancient state formation, defined primarily, but by no means exclusively, in political terms. So when archaeologists talk among themselves about these issues, we often talk about state formation processes. We'll be discussing in significantly more detail the characteristics that archaeologists use to define states. But we can come up with at least a short list, so that we can say that states are defined by the appearance of centralized governmental systems, political centralization, a monopoly over the legitimate use of force, both internally and externally, the existence of bureaucratic forms of state control, and usually some kind of redistributive systems. And we are going to be coming back to this list of characteristics repeatedly during this set of lectures. We'll talk about these issues in more detail. But one thing to note here is the challenge of deriving these often quite complex characteristics of states, especially historically known states, from archaeological data. Remember, and this is again perhaps a change of perspective, but remember that for the most part, archaeologists study garbage, the detritus of human behavior. Again, I'll talk about this in more detail later, because it involves a sea change in the ways in which archaeologists through time have changed the focus of their studies of the world's great ancient civilizations. Archaeology began largely as the study of pharaohs and pyramids and kings and occasionally queens and treasure and all the rest of it. Civilization with a capital C, if you like. We can go back to the Indiana Jones movies. Indiana Jones wasn't inaccurate, he's just 100 years out of date. But archaeology has evolved to something far more humble and far more powerful at the same time. The study of the day-to-day lives of ancient peoples through the analysis of the detritus, the garbage, that they've left behind. We can do things and we can find out things about ancient societies and ancient ways of life that treasure hunters like Indy could never dream of. The problem for a course like this, the challenge of a course like this, lies in reconciling these two impulses. An archaeology of the rich and powerful, the strong centers of ancient states, vis-a-vis an archaeology of the humble and voiceless, that 99.9% of humanity who built and bore these ancient states, but who are never heard from in the chronicles of their existence. And that is a real challenge. It's one that I'll try to face up to through this set of lectures. The challenge of balancing the analysis of political centralization and the role of elites and the role of nobility and the building and importance of monumental architecture with the necessary and equally interesting analysis of the lives of common people, the people who didn't live in the palaces, who lived in farming villages and acted as fishermen and porters and servants, and whose lives are just as significant as those of the kings and queens. Despite these problems with the term civilization, archaeologists do continue to use it in a more specific sense. When archaeologists speak of civilizations, and when I speak about civilizations in this set of lectures, I'll be talking about political and ideological systems that were shared over a region. Very frequently, between different states in a region. Thus, we can speak, for example, of Mesopotamian civilization as a shared understanding of culture that was found throughout a whole variety of different city-states in Mesopotamia. And this is a topic that we will continue to address as we go through the different examples that I'm going to use in this set of lectures. Other cases in other parts of the world, and in fact, we will see that these shared cultural systems, these civilizations spreading over sometimes very large regions, exist in many other areas of the world besides Mesopotamia. We'll find them in Mesoamerica, we'll see them in China, we'll see them in a whole variety of different areas. We'll see as well that civilizations as a regional distribution of culture is often a distribution of elite culture, a culture of the wealthy and powerful and the noble, in part because it's elites who become most invested in issues of long-distance contacts, the lure of the exotic, rare items and foreign habits. Those are the things that elites use in many cases all over the world, in the past and at present, to display their status. Elites can translate these exotic and rare and foreign goods and ideas into power, as we're going to see. So, what are the different elements of this course? We're going to begin this set of lectures by considering why archaeologists, and not just the general public, spend so much time thinking about the origins of state-level societies and the functioning of civilizations. This has a great deal to do with the origin of archaeology as a scientific discipline, with the archaeology of archaeology itself, so to speak. One question that archaeologists ask ourselves is, do societies or cultural systems evolve in ways analogous to biological evolution and equally subject to scientific analysis? If so, states would probably be one of the most recent forms of such cultural and political evolution, significant to us, and also perhaps with more data available than for earlier periods and earlier cultural forms. So we'll begin with a consideration of the history of this study in archaeology. We'll then examine some of the archaeological and ethnographic cases that we can think of as different kinds of stepping stones toward state-level societies. This will include, for example, research at the Anatolian agricultural site of Çatalhöyük in what's now Turkey. A fascinating, amazing archaeological site with some really exciting fieldwork being done there. I will note at this point that at various times through this set of lectures, I'm going to be referring to modern examples. I'll be using modern analogies for ancient behaviors. The primary reason that I'm going to be doing this, and I just want to note that there'll be a variety of different cases where I do this. I want to demystify ancient behaviors. What I want to show in a whole variety of different cases is people in the past are not aliens to us, and we shouldn't think of them that way. They're people over the last 5,000 years or a little longer that are addressing challenges in the world. And when they address those challenges, they often come up with solutions to problems that are ones that we can understand if they're put in modern context. So there are going to be some places here where I'm moving back and forth between the ancient world and the modern world, and I want to do it because we shouldn't think about these ancient cases as mysteries. They're not mysteries. They're problems, they're research problems. But these people are like us. Some of the other theoretical issues that we're going to cover in this set of lectures. Should we expect that states will develop everywhere in the same ways? This goes back to this issue of cultural evolution. Will the fundamental characteristics of states be similar across the globe? This is where the anthropology comes in, the science, if you like. This is a comparative study. We're trying to tease out the characteristics of not merely states, but state formation There are real debates about these questions in archaeology. For example, can we say that societies in general and states in particular evolve in the way that I just mentioned? We'll then move on to examine the development of the earliest states, proceeding regionally, because it's useful to consider the particular environmental circumstances and historical trajectories that we find in different areas. This is also, to some extent, this regional survey across the globe, is also, to some extent, an historical progression with the earliest states in the Near East, in Mesopotamia and the Nile Valley coming first. This will involve looking at trajectories of state formation, the characteristics of state formation in Egypt, in Mesopotamia. It will include an explicit comparison of states in these two regions and some consideration of why states that appear at just about the same time period, just about exactly 5,000 years ago, relatively not very far apart in the Nile Valley, in the valley of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in Mesopotamia, why these states in these different areas turned out rather differently. Why we have a territorial state in Egypt vis-a-vis city-states in Mesopotamia. Our attention will then turn to successor states in these areas, especially in the Eastern Mediterranean with the Minoan and Mycenaean civilizations. This will also include a consideration of the Greek Dark Ages and how archaeologists interpret mechanisms of state collapse and what exactly collapse means for these complex social and political systems. We'll then examine early states in other parts of the Old World, the Indus Valley on the border of India and Pakistan, which may provide a significant contrast to models of state formation and political power used in the contemporary Near East. We'll examine the roots of Chinese civilization in the Neolithic and the Shang dynasty, and in Southeast Asia. Here we'll look at the development of writing in quite different circumstances than in Mesopotamia. We'll look at the rituals of ideology surrounding statehood. Statehood developed in other areas of the world afterwards, and in some cases in response to these precocious examples. We'll examine the trajectories towards statehood and civilization in later sub-Saharan Africa, which is often unknown to the Western general public. We'll look at different areas in Africa, the Horn of Africa, in what's now primarily Ethiopia, the inland Niger Delta of West Africa, Great Zimbabwe, and the southern Lake Chad Basin where I work. We'll move from there to the indigenous states and civilizations of the New World, first in highland and lowland Mesoamerica, the area stretching from Mexico to Honduras and Nicaragua. This will involve looking at the origins of social and political complexity during the formative period, and then the full fluorescence of states in the classic period with Teotihuacan in the Valley of Mexico and the Maya states further to the south. Finally, we'll consider how states originated along the Pacific coast of South America, including new data that indicate the people were building large ceremonial centers, including a type of pyramid, along the coasts of Peru at the same time that state formation was beginning in Egypt and Mesopotamia. There are questions of what that means about the role of agriculture and the role of marine resources in state formation in these areas. When I teach world prehistory classes at Bowdoin, I always tell my students, every time I teach another course, that some new discovery each time will be made that renders at least some parts of what I said obsolete. And this is always true. This is an illustration of the dynamism and excitement of archaeology. I want to tell you all the same thing, and I hope that you'll take that in the same spirit of anticipation that my Bowdoin students do. The course will conclude with a reconsideration of some of the themes that we began with. The way way in which a comparative approach allows us to think about the different trajectories through which states have formed in different parts of the world and their similarities and differences in varying physical and cultural circumstances and historical circumstances as well. We'll have the same issues coming up again and again. Territoriality, the role of elites, hierarchy and heterarchy, cycles of rise and collapse, the developments, the various developments of writing systems, the role of ideology, and issues of archaeological interpretation. I will note one thing. Every topic that we look at, every lecture in this series, is a field of study in its own with many practitioners and often significant debate. My perspective is, I think, fairly mainstream. But other such perspectives exist. That's as it should be. Analysis and debate are the basis of any fruitful investigation of the human past. I hope that you'll enjoy learning about this field as much as I do teaching it and working in it. We have a lot to get covered, so let's get started.